What is up, and welcome back to 24 Minutes of A24, the podcast that takes a look at the A24 library 24 minutes at a time. I am Ethan Simi.
And I'm Ben Lawhorn. This week on the pod, we are talking about a wild and crazy guy as we dig into A24's newest documentary, Steve.
Near the end, Ben, you're killing me. We got to re-go.
Why?
Because it says near the end of Vietnam.
Oh, I forgot to change that thing too. Dang, dude.
I can't pick up. I'm not that good. I can't pick up from that. That's hilarious. No, oh my god.
So good. I'm sorry. It's so short too. Follows the life and career of Steve Martin. That's literally the IMDb tagline. Just leave this in.
Oh, it's my like, god. Yeah, that's going. Incredible. That's incredible. This new documentary from A24 follows the life and career of actor Steve Martin. Plain and simple. As easy as that. My goodness. Pretty straightforward. I don't know what amount of that blunder is going to stay in the pod. We'll see what we give the people. I don't know if I can let that get out.
I'll take responsibility. This is all my fault. I screwed up the doc. I hope it all stays in.
I wish I was that good. You had one job, Ben. You had one job.
I had one job.
Okay, we got a few housekeeping things that I want to talk about for A24. Then we're going to talk about the new documentary, Steve Martin, a documentary in two pieces. This is streaming right now on Apple TV Plus. It is a new two-part documentary on the life of Steve Martin. Each part is like 100 minutes long. So it's like nearly 200 minutes of content. It's like two movies. It's intense. Yeah.
It's like, I think the official runtime is 3 hours and 11 minutes. Or one Oppenheimer. So
wow. Yeah. Well, that's a bad position to put me in because I'm picking Oppenheimer. not to say that I didn't enjoy this documentary because I did, but anything against Oppie, it's a done deal.
Yeah, it's understandable.
It's tough. Okay, couple of things I want to talk about. We got to talk about Civil War again, Ben.
Yeah,
we got to do it. I think we're on week three right now of like talking about Civil War specifically on the pod. I feel good about it.
Yeah, any Kiki talk I'm here for. Let's do it.
Exactly. Civil War is number one at the domestic box office for two weekends in a row. This, of course, is the opening weekend 2 weeks ago when we covered it here on the show, and the previous weekend, I don't think it was projected or predicted to come in at number one at the domestic box office in its second weekend. Had some pretty stiff competition. I know, of course, going into this weekend, some really big competition with Challengers. I'm almost positive Civil War will be dethroned. I don't see a world in which it's number one again. But number one, two weekends in a row, huge milestone for A24. It is also A24's fifth highest grossing film of all time already. It's only been out for 2 weeks.
Crazy.
That's wild.
Yeah, I can't believe it. I hope it continues to do well. But yeah, judging by my horny ass timeline on Twitter, everyone has seen Challengers. So it's probably going to get dethroned this week, but I hope people continue to see it.
My timeline is that incredible way to put it is maximum horny. It's
crazy.
Unbelievable. We're recording on a Thursday night. Of course, there have been like pre-screenings for Challengers that happened on Monday. There were pre-screenings that happened yesterday. The film is obviously opening tonight, technically, and then Friday and this weekend. I can't see Challengers until Saturday afternoon, and I feel like I'm engulfed in Challengers content. I haven't even seen the film. It's insane.
Yeah. It's all I see. That's like pretty much it. Like, I guess there's an NFL thing related happening tonight as well. I don't know.
But everything no, else is Challengers? Zendaya
and Mike Feist. Yeah. It's like, that's all it is.
Yeah, definitely. So I think Challengers is going to take the domestic box office this weekend, but huge milestone for Civil War. I think well-deserved. Again, I think if people are looking for a good conversation around Civil War, obviously listen to our conversation. I got to plug us first. I think Please. We had quite a good pod discussing it, breaking it down, talking about the pros and the cons of the film. I really think digging pretty deep. I did listen to the episode of the big Picture from The Ringer. They dive into Civil War very deeply, and it is a very engaging and interesting conversation. So if you're looking for something more, I recommend checking that out. I got two more things. Second one right here is we got a little merch. By the time this episode comes out, the merch will be out. So I will just say that it might not be available. It might be sold out. I don't know, but we're getting Love Lies Bleeding merch. We had talked about it on our Love Lies Bleeding episode. You specifically, you were like, when are we getting some gym merch for the Crater Gym? We're getting it, Ben. You we did it. You made it happen.
I think that just goes to show that the people in charge of merch at A24 listen to the pod. So thank 100%. You for listening. I appreciate it. I'm excited about those staff shirts because that was like one of the first things I noticed watching that movie is like, oh, they got to make those shirts. Those are fucking awesome. So I'm excited about that.
Two staff tees, sports socks, and then we get a gym glass ashtray. Like I said, by the time this pod comes out, these items will be out. So this game will no longer really matter. But let's play the price game because I'm curious. Obviously, A24 works with online ceramics. We got an online ceramics for The Curse, for X, for Pearl, for Hereditary. We get these things all the time. Those t-shirts go for $60 or $65. Hoodies, $120, $130. We're looking at two t-shirts, a pair of socks, and an ashtray. How much do you think the tees are? Because obviously I want one.
Yeah.
But where's my personal limit? I don't know. And I need to figure it out now so I'm ready tomorrow morning when the merch goes on sale.
Okay, here's my predictions.
Okay.
$40 for the t-shirts.
Okay.
$25 for the socks.
Ooh, steep. Steep for socks.
And I'm saying $36 in the ashtray.
Shoot. Okay.
That's what I'm going with.
That's fair. That's I would play $40 for the tees as well. I think that makes sense. Socks, I was gonna go like $18. But again, you're right. Part of a capsule, part of a movie from A24. Little bit of a markup. And then the ashtray, gosh, I want to say like 28 just personally. Cause if I see it at 28, I'm like done, sold. I want the ashtray. I don't smoke, but I've considered it since I've seen this film. And this is not helping my case.
It might be the reason to take it up. Once you have the ashtray, it's like, what's the reason not to, you know, what's your limit here? Like,
I don't know. Bucks. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Like you're saying 40 total or like 40 for a tee?
It's 40 plus shipping. Like that's might be too much.
That's a problem. But think of our situation. We are both AAA 24 members. All access A24. True. So we do get 10% off, which is a bonus. Obviously, not a spawn con here, but you know, plug for AAA 24 worth the $5 a month. I'd say my
watching
limit.
Uncut Gems for free right now.
On the A24 app. Just fired up. Free. Yeah. Incredible. The socks I'm a little less concerned about because I just wear the same socks all the, like not the singular pair of socks, but
I appreciate the clarification. The same socks every day.
Every day, one wash a week. By the time we get to Friday, it's bad news bears. I'm not super interested in the socks, but like I said, the tees. If they're going to sneak in a $35 t-shirt, I'm done. It's over. We start breaching 45. I got to do some serious reconsideration of the funds.
Love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I really got to love it. But again, here's the problem that I always suffer with. And this happened to me with the Civil War merch. I missed out on the Civil War merch because I was flying and, I was flying for my day job that does not surround movies. So I was extra mad and I missed out on it. I don't know if I'll ever get the chance to buy those products again. If I don't get something from this capsule, what are the chances that I ever get it again or ever get a shot to buy another Crater Gym t-shirt? Zero, right?
Not at cost. Yeah, you're going to be on eBay probably paying 50% more than they paid for it. So, yeah, you gotta be on it.
I just talked myself into one of everything is what it sounds like.
Okay. All right. I like
it. It sounds old.
Now you have two pairs of socks. That's right. Amazing. So good job.
We doubled
your socks.
We did it. We doubled the socks, one every other day. Next week on the show, if I come decked out in Love Lies Bleeding merch, you know what happened. Wait. If I'm smoking next week on the pod, I got the ashtray.
You got that ashtray.
That's all I need. Okay. What are you going to buy? What's your limit? You asked me mine. I didn't ask you yours.
I think a tee. I think that's what I'm going to stick with. Okay. I was really excited about the tees. Socks, I feel like I have like just way too many of.
More than one pair. Okay.
More than one pair. Yeah. I'm a stance slut. I really like the socks.
Oh, you're a stance
quite a bit.
Guy.
Yeah, for sure.
Interesting. Okay. Do you go for like anything specific? I have one pair of stance socks and they're Darth Vader. They're pretty cool.
Oh, nice.
But other than that, I don't go stance.
Yesterday I wore my Outkast Stankonia ones.
Ooh, wow.
Today I'm wearing some like kind of floral ones. I also enjoy the socks that you put me on for running. Those things are amazing. So I don't know if those are the socks that you wear, but
you're welcome.
Those things are fantastic. So Yeah, I don't know. The ashtray, I don't know if I need it, but it does look really fucking cool. So that's another cost.
That's what I'm saying.
It's like $20 and it's like, sure, why not? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, I could do that. But if it's above that, I might have to miss out.
Yeah, that's for sure. I want to talk about one other thing really quickly while we're talking about A24 merch. Your birthday is coming up. It's on Sunday. This pod releases on a Friday, so it's 2 days from the release of this pod. My birthday's coming up in a couple of weeks as well, in May. Obviously, A24, you get a birthday gift if you're part of their AA24 program. Every month/year, it's like different things. You kind of basically get like a specialty web page that they guide you to. They're like, hey, you get to pick out one of these things. Last year, I picked out a Zola record, like the score on vinyl, which is really, really cool. I've seen people as of late posting pictures of like the Lighthouse script book that they got for their birthday for free, which is insane. I think they send the email on your birthday, like literally on the day. Are you hoping to get anything? Are you hoping anything's available for you that you're looking up in the shop?
Yeah, I think last year I got like the burgundy like gym shorts. I think it's
funny enough
with.
That you mentioned those because I'm wearing those right now because you gave them to me.
You're wearing my shorts.
I'm wearing your shorts. I own one pair of socks and I'm wearing your pair of shorts.
I don't know, man. I haven't even like really thought about it. If they're doing more of the script books, obviously we know my feelings on The Lighthouse and just Robert Eggers in general, but
very pro.
If they like had the Midsommar one or something like that, like, I would be all over it. But to be honest, I'm still just waiting on my Stop Making Sense shit. Like, I hope they're shipping that out soon.
You bought some of it, right?
Yeah, I bought the Blu-ray and the vinyl, or and a shirt. I bought the shirt and Blu-ray. Yeah, the 4K.
What's going on with the tribute album? We've got like four songs in the last 3 months.
You release it. Finally, please.
Release the album.
But we have the pre-order now for the vinyl, right? Like, they put that out?
I believe so. So I feel like we're getting close. Each release is very good. But I feel like I'm being strung on here and I don't like it.
Yeah. It's like, just put it out there. Come on.
Just put it out there. I would ideally like a script book. We'll report back when our birthdays transpire and we get a gift.
Let you know.
Yeah. We'll come in on that.
We're both Tauruses then, right?
I'm a Taurus. Yeah, you bet.
Hell yeah. Okay.
Nobody talks about Tauruses. It's the most slept on sign, honestly.
Yeah. And he needs a double dose.
Where's our Taurus hive?
It's right here. We have as many Tauruses on this pod. As Ethan has socks, so take that.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. We did it. Last piece of housekeeping before we talk about this Steve Martin documentary. Hereditary happened in IMAX this past week, just a couple of days ago. As of recording, it happened last night. I saw Hereditary in IMAX. Ben, did you get the chance to check it out?
I had the chance. I just chose not to take it because
conscious
that movie,
decision.
Yeah, that movie fucked me up. I think my girlfriend would have dragged me to it if she could have, because she really, I think, enjoys that movie. But, you know, to be completely transparent here, when that movie first came out, I made her go see it alone. Because I did not want to go see it in theaters.
No. Wow.
And then when she came home, I had her tell me the whole story. I was like, tell me everything that happens. And I still didn't go see it in theaters. I just waited until it came. That movie just like...
I did not know this about you. I did not know that Hereditary scared you so much.
Yeah, man. That movie like trips me out. It's so well done. It's so good. But it just like, it really affects me. And so you asked me if I was going to go see it. And I was like, no, it's an IMAX. Like, this movie freaks me out at home. There's no way I'm going to go watch it on an 80-foot screen or whatever. Like, that sounds insane. I'm so happy for everyone that went to go see it and enjoyed it because I'm sure it was an amazing experience. But talk to me after Uncut Gems. Then I will have seen something in IMAX.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. Well, I can tell you right now that we will be dedicating about half an episode to my Uncut Gems IMAX experience because I feel like that's what my life has been working towards.
Yeah.
And I feel seen that A24 is doing that. I did see Hereditary in IMAX. To your point, yeah, pretty fucking scary in IMAX. Like, there's just no way around it. I hadn't seen Hereditary since we covered it here on the show in the one of the very first episodes.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. And so I had forgotten a lot of the kind of the narrative logistics of what happened. Mm-hmm. I knew some of the bigger beats, obviously, of, you know, some of the more iconic scenes, I'm Your Mother monologue, the dad getting set on fire, things like this. I just, it was so encompassing and engulfing and like in your face on an IMAX screen. It was insane. The first time I saw Hereditary, I rated it 4 stars for some reason. I don't know what was going on with me. I saw it last night, 5 star, just truly a horror masterpiece.
Yeah.
And I'm having a self-confliction because obviously Midsommar, one of my favorite A24 movies, one of my favorite horror movies of all time, something I do think is really a 5-star masterpiece. And then by putting Hereditary in this as well, I'm like, yo, this guy's directorial debut, Ari Aster's first film, is incredible, is 5 stars, which is saying something. And then I'm saying the movie that he comes out with next year, literally in the subsequent year, also 5 stars. So this guy's just 2 for 2 in 2 years, which is a lot, which makes me think I'm due for a Beau Is Afraid rewatch because I want Ari to be 3 for 3 on the 5-star train. But Hereditary in IMAX, if you went, you know what I'm talking about. But holy shit, what an experience.
Yeah. Yeah,
truly, truly incredible stuff. I'm excited that I'm glad that they're doing this series. Of course, I'm really excited for Uncut Gems. So we're less than a month away now, which I just can't. I can't believe it. Holy shit. Yeah. I'm going to come. So great. OK, let's talk about Steve Martin documentary in 2 pieces. You're kind of a Steve Martin guy here on the pod. I got to be honest with you. You are more well versed in Steve than I am.
I appreciate you saying that. I would also like to acknowledge how low the bar is between the two of us here. Since I think you've seen a Steve Martin movie. But I do enjoy Steve Martin. Yes, I think he's hilarious. I enjoy his movies quite a bit.
You sent me a list, like a short list of like Steve Martin movies to check out. And the reason, here's the thing. Super duper honesty time. The reason that we pushed this episode to this week instead of covering it last week like we had initially planned was so that I could, in fact, watch a couple Steve Martin movies and come into this and say, oh, you know, I relate. I've seen The Three Amigos. I've seen The Jerk. I've seen these very iconic Steve Martin films. And I had every intention to do that, Ben.
Yes,
and it just didn't happen. I still remain having seen a single Steve Martin film. Getting ready to talk about a near like a 3-hour plus documentary on the guy that I've only seen one movie of his. And I wasn't alive during his stand-up years. I just like this guy just totally missed me. So I'm gonna bring a weird energy to this doc. I'm just gonna be quite frank with you here.
I mean, I'm excited about it. Like, I am not much for his stand-up. Not that I don't enjoy it. I just don't have any experience with it. Like, for me, Steve Martin is a movie actor, and he's on SNL. So, I don't have a whole lot of experience with his early career either. So that we're both kind of in the same boat, especially, you know, as these two documentaries are broken up. I think you and I, for part one, are pretty much in the same exact boat where it's like, I learned a lot of stuff that I didn't know because I hadn't really experienced him. But on the movie front, like it was great to see him talk about some of these films.
Yeah. Okay, good. I feel a little bit better. I still feel bad, but I feel a little bit better.
Steve, if you're listening, please come on, you know, please come on.
We please will come on. This. Yeah. It is nothing personal. It doesn't mean anything at all against your work. Except for Pennies from Heaven, which I guess you're not very proud of. So I'll share the same sentiment, as you. We can just team up on that one. Did you like this documentary?
Yeah, I did quite a bit. I thought it was really well done. I enjoyed, you know, the interviews with Steve himself, and it wasn't gratuitous like with the guests, you know, with Jerry Seinfeld and Tina Fey and Lorne Michaels. Like, they said what they needed to say, but we weren't relying on them too much. I thought it was a very interesting documentary, and even like inserting some of his comic style, you know, like literal comic book style, like cartoon drawing stuff. I thought that was kind of fun. But yeah, I thought this was a very well done documentary.
I agree. Yeah. I thought it was a good documentary. I think it's really difficult. We've only ever covered one documentary here before on the show, and that was Val. And we covered that back in episode 15. So it's been 130 episodes since we've covered a documentary here on the show, which is insane. I think it's really difficult to stack a documentary against like a Hereditary or, yeah, you know, Beau is Afraid or like whatever other movie you want to pull out of the A24 library. It's really hard to stack it against it. So like I watched this, I had a good time. I think it's a very well-made documentary. I learned a lot about Steve Martin. I like the structure. I like the energy. I like the flow. Like, I think it's all very good. And then I went into my A24 rankings and I was like, I don't know. It's in like the bottom 10. Cause like, I'm not going to put it above like First Reformed. Like, what are we talking about here? So like,
yeah, it's your wild card, dude. Yeah. Of course.
I would never turn on my wild card like that. It's my wild card. So, you know, I feel like it's tough to stack it against something like in the A24 library, but I did have a really good time with this documentary. Did the two-part structure, like you mentioned, it's a little over 3 hours in total time. Episode one is titled Then, and basically we get from 1975 all the way, or I guess like the late 60s, really, yeah, all the way up until he makes The Jerk in the late 70s. And then episode two, titled Now, and that is where we get current Steve Martin, modern day Steve Martin, Only Murders in the Building, Steve Martin. And so for me, I really like that two like part structure. I think it worked really well to split them against each other. Did that work for you?
It was so natural. I think it was a perfect way to go about this because even his life, you know, leaving stand up to pursue films, like that was just the perfect time to end that first documentary, the first act, and then go into the second act, just like he did with his life. I thought it was really interesting listening to interview with the person who directed this, whose name I'm forgetting right now, but I guess he spoke to Steve Martin for like 18 hours before they even started filming. Wow. Like they just like chatted and got to know each other and stuff. So it's like you spend 18 hours with someone, you get to learn on some things. And I think that really kind of helped build this structure. And I think it works perfectly. Three would have been too much. It would just would have been a really long one documentary. So I think they fell into a real natural break here.
Do you think that you and I could do an in-person pod for 18 hours straight?
For sure. Yeah.
What would we do? Is that? What do we cover? Like
isn't that like Gems watching Oppenheimer times? Three times? Or like how long is 18 hours? God. I don't know. Maybe watch Babylon three times.
Babylon once, Oppenheimer once, and then just commentary the rest of the time.
We'll just talk about it.
Locked in. Yeah. We'll just start at the top of the A24 like filmography, and we'll just start working our way down, and wherever we get cut off at 18 hours. I think we should do that.
If we ever do like a fundraiser for charity, that's what we'll do. We'll do 18
hour. That's what I was just gonna say.
Pod.
18 hour live pod. Let's do it. Send in your suggestions now. We'll start finding a venue.
Do
this
in person though? Like, do I come up to Portland or do we are we doing it like this? Who knows?
No. We gotta go in person. We gotta be LA or New York, and we gotta get a stage. We gotta get people. It's an 18-hour sit-in is what we're doing here. So
that's what we're doing.
I think that's the goal. 2024, that's our year-end goal. 18-hour live pod. I think we should
make
set
it happen.
Sure. Look at this. Director of Steve, the documentary, just setting pod goals for us. Incredible guy. Okay. Let's do True Cinema. Let's walk our way through this documentary. Like I said, episode one is titled Then. I've got a handful of bullet points that we'll just kind of maybe like talk about and kind of like flesh through maybe what we learned about Steve Martin, what we liked, things like that. So the documentary opens, the first voice you hear, Jerry Seinfeld, just shout out my boy, Jerry Seinfeld, who kind of, from what I hear, kind of a terrible person, but also someone that, I fall asleep to his voice every single night. He does not read me a bedtime story or a lullaby. I just watch Seinfeld as I fall asleep.
Nice. Okay.
What do you mean? What do you mean that explains a lot?
No, it's good. It's just good to know. It's good to know that one of your idols is a horrible person. The person you look up to the most
out
in your life is a horrible person. Jerry Seinfeld and Howie Ratner. Those are
my idols. Those are my guys. Like if I can just be like those guys, then we've made it. Opens up with Seinfeld's voice. And the one that I wrote down, though, because like you mentioned, we go through Lorne Michaels, Tina Fey. Obviously, Martin Short kind of comes in the second episode. We get a lot of people that know Steve Martin very well and have worked with him and know his life. Lorne Michaels basically starts this And one of the quotes that he says is that Steve Martin reinvented stand-up. And I think for me, coming in about as blind as you can come in to like Steve Martin's career, Steve Martin's stand-up, his filmography, his like comedy style, I didn't really know any of that. And to hear someone like Lorne Michaels, obviously creator and producer of SNL, say that he reinvented stand-up, I was like, okay, like that sets the bar for Steve Martin's life and like what he meant to stand-up. I think it was a great way to start this out. Help me get a good frame of reference for how important he was in the stand-up world.
For sure. When someone like Lorne Michaels, who has seen everything, you know, is able to like quantify you as someone who's reinvented stand-up, that's huge. And, you know, Steve talked about that a little bit in there too, how he did it, you know, the traditional, you know, punchline, the build up, the, you know, all that, the punchline, all that kind of stuff, and how he changed his style to just like keep everyone in the build up the whole time. It's just like almost like this absurdist humor. I thought it was really interesting to hear that. And yeah, it's just gotta be one of the greatest compliments you could get from someone. Lorne Michaels telling people that you were one of the inventors of like the modern stand up.
It's really the same as like you telling me like, hey, you're pretty good at podcasting. That's what I feel like it must have felt like.
I fancy myself the Lorne Michaels of podcasting.
I've never heard you say that, by the way. So I don't know what that says.
Birthday's coming up. Don't spoil it. You know, we'll see what happens.
We'll see what gift is out there. Then we learn that Steve Martin had a job at Disneyland. When he was 10, he wanted to be a magician. He gets a job at Disneyland and he is selling essentially like news and news pamphlets, I believe. And they cost like a nickel or whatever. And then he ends up getting a job at the magic shop because he wants to be a magician. If you could have a job at Disneyland today, it's got to be modern day Disneyland. Is there a specific job, location, spot that you'd be in?
I'm going to answer your question by not answering your question. And I'm going to tell you that my dream job growing up was to be a Disney animator. Like that was my dream job as a child. Yeah. I wanted to.
And look what you settled for. And here essentially I am. The next best thing.
Yeah, essentially, if not better. You know what I mean? Honestly. So. Yeah, that was my dream job. I just wanted to be an animator. So that's what I would love to be doing for sure.
Ah, wow. Okay, cool. I feel like I'm incompetent to answer this question now because I did not have a lifelong childhood dream of being a Disney animator. Yeah. I don't know. Magic Shop would be pretty cool. Like I feel like Steve Martin got in at a good spot and you know, he learned magic. He learned that's the selling technique that they use there of like punchlines and jokes to like help sell that. I think if I had to be anywhere in Disneyland, I used to go to Disneyland all the time. I used to have an annual pass, even though I didn't live in California, and we would go multiple times a year and it was super great. I haven't been since pre-pandemic, so I don't know how it's changed or maybe like what's different now, but I kind of would just want to be a janitor. I got to be honest with you. I just want to go walk around the park, sweep up cups, sweep up some trash just kind of meander, hang on out, you know, next best thing to being a patron.
I was going to think you'd say Galaxy's Edge. I thought you'd like want to be the Star Wars shit.
See, I don't know because I haven't been to Galaxy's Edge.
Here's what I'm hearing is that you and I need to have our 18-hour podcast at Disneyland.
That's it.
Maybe that's what we need to do. Open to close podcasting from Disneyland, live from Disneyland.
From the porch that's on Main Street that has room just enough for two people on that bench.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's us. We can do it.
I love it.
Got to set our sights high. Then at 18, he goes on and he works at a theater at Knott's Berry Farms. This is kind of like the next evolution of him being like, oh, maybe I can like do this thing. Maybe I can like act and be funny and like kind of pursue this a little bit more, like truthfully. And I just like, it sounds like a standard, you know, like, oh, I had a dream and I thought I could do this. And then like, I, you know, like evolved into doing this and I was lucky enough to work here at 18 or whatever. But like the way that it's framed in the movie is like he was very aware of what he needed to do and where he needed to go and the places that gave him an opportunity. So like this working in Knott's Berry Farm, they're just like super smart play by Steve Martin to like get in the world and do that.
Yeah, it's smart just to like get yourself in front of numerous people just all day long, random people, new people, and just kind of build your strengths as a performer and stuff. And that was, yeah, that was a genius move.
Could you perform in Osprey form?
Dude, no. There's just no way I could do it. My biggest fear in life is like performing karaoke. Like, there is no way I could perform in front of people. I would hate that. That would
biggest fear in life. If, yeah. Okay, so you don't have a go-to karaoke song then?
No, not at all.
Do you feel like if you have a go-to karaoke song, that's like a gateway to like maybe having to face your fears?
It might be. And I think I have one that I would sing because, so I used to be in a band. Mm-hmm. And we were a cover band and we got so like dialed into our parts that at practice we would sometimes change instruments and I would often sing the songs during our practices. That's my version incredible. Of karaoke, but I was like surrounded by three people that I like completely trusted. I could sing there, whatever, you know mm-hmm. what I mean? Like, it's this weird mix of like, I need to know the people really well if I'm going to sing in front of them, which is like the opposite of karaoke. So if I was ever to do karaoke, if you ever get me drunk enough, I would do Billy Idol's Rebel Yell.
Wow. I would expect nothing less. Honestly, that's very Ben coded. That's good.
Yeah.
How much would it take though? Are we talking like pitchers? Like we need like a couple pitchers?
No, we need hard liquor. Beer is not going to get me there.
You got to upgrade.
Beer is not going to get me there. I can tell you that.
I meant pitchers of tequila, actually.
Oh, okay. If we're doing Margs or whatever we're doing, like that's the way to go for sure. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
We can find the limit. Maybe in Vegas, we'll find the limit. Who knows?
Post 18-hour pod. We'll get you on the karaoke. Yeah,
exactly. That'll be the after show.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, honestly, little teaser, little taste test for what we might have coming out in June. But yeah, maybe we'll be together. Maybe we'll be in Vegas. Maybe we'll be drinking. We'll see. Who knows? Will see.
Or maybe you bleep all this and people have no idea what we said.
what we're talking about.
What did they say? Where are they going?
Yeah. I accidentally cut this part of the pod out instead of the intro. cut out the most important information. Look, I couldn't perform at Knott's Berry Farm. I'm with you.
No way.
Getting on a stage in front of strangers, I'd rather die. Like, literally, I would rather die. Then Steve Martin goes on to study philosophy at Long Beach State. This is another like key kind of indicator in this documentary of what he does. I think really important to bring this up because it does, in fact, shape how he views comedy, how he understands comedy, what he tries to accomplish with comedy. And I think it really shapes the way that his brain like works, the way that he understands the world. And for me, not knowing anything like this, I was like, oh, shit, like he studied philosophy? That's incredible. Like he was interested in it because he was like, well, if this isn't gonna work out, philosophy is the thing that I'm interested in. Like,
yeah,
I'm, you know, and that's where he wanted to go. I think this, knowing Steve Martin now and how he is now and what I know about him, this makes sense. This seems like something he held on to and really helped guide his life.
For sure. Yeah, I think this set the tone for the rest of his life. For some reason, philosophy for me seems like a very introverted person degree or specialty to go after. And it's funny because he is, I mean, people talk about that, like he's a very private person, but in such a like a extroverted like job, you know, like where you just have to be in front of people all the time. But he comes across such a quiet, introverted person. But the philosophy stuff just totally makes sense.
Yeah. Deep in episode 2, when we're getting pretty much done with the doc, everybody is like, Steve, pretty solemn guy. Like he doesn't really let people in, which is wild. Like, he was the most popular stand-up comedian in the world. Like, that's really confusing to me to do that. But I guess, right? Like stage presence, personal presence, kind of find out how to cut those things apart. Next bullet point I have here, first page show. He got a break with this band called the Smothers Brothers. Pretty good band name, I feel like.
Yeah. I think they were brothers. It was like a comedy duo, but they also did like music and stuff like that. And it was like a variety show. So that's a pretty good break to get, you know, to end up on there at such a young age. So Smothers Brothers were the shit back in the day.
From what I hear, I don't know. Pretty cool. I couldn't come up with a band name quite that good. I'm sure that we'll however they come up to that. Yeah, we'll have to figure something out.
Yeah.
Then Steve Martin goes on, he gets really bad reviews for his stand-up that he pursues kind of outside of this initial start that he gets with the Smothered Brothers. He gets really bad reviews, and then he ends up playing at the Playboy Club. And this is kind of the part where he starts to realize like what he needs to do to be successful. And it's like not play at places like the Playboy Club, because your audience is different there than it's going to be somewhere else. He preferred much more intimate audiences and people that were locked in and engaged versus something like this. So he mentions in the doc that he suffered comedy death at the Playboy Club, and that was worse than regular death. I can only imagine. It does sound worse than regular death, honestly.
Yeah, dying on stage seems awful. Like, you have nowhere terrible. To go, and you're just there by yourself, you know? And he even talks about that in part two, where he's just like, he loves working with partners because, like, at least if you're dying together, you know? And you guys can just be like, you know, oh, God, this is going horrible. Or when you're up there by yourself, it's just like, I would hate that.
Yeah, I would hate that. As he grows, as he continues his stand-up and persists and keeps with it, he famously becomes known for his arrow that goes like through his head, and then his glasses and his mustache and the big nose situation. I looked on Amazon and I was like, how funny would that be if I showed up in one of those? Well, I didn't pull the trigger, but I thought about it, and that's what matters.
It's the thought that counts. Yeah, for sure. So we'll pretend.
I only made it halfway there.
I hope you Photoshop yourself for the thumbnail of the episode, just like you actually did do it.
Yeah. Pod in this the full time. In 1975, he basically gets turned on to SNL. He finds his people. And this is where Steve Martin finds out, I do like working with people. Like, I like performing with people. And this is my crew, and I feel welcome, and it feels good, and it feels like I can continue to figure out my comedy, which obviously his banjo playing was kind of an imperative part of that, and he was unique in that aspect. And he goes from being a solo performer for 15 plus years to then discovering that he can do this with other people. He gets really famous. He starts really getting successful. He releases his album called Let's Get Small, that he had recorded like 2 years prior and just had never released it. And he finally released it. And then the end of episode one takes us to the point where basically he makes the jerk, and he makes the jump from stand up. He's playing in front of crowds of 7,000 people, and he's incredibly successful, most popular stand up comedian. And then he's like, you know what? This is a good time to go out. It's a good time to evolve into a screen actor. I wanted to say one thing. I think in this section is where he does this joke, and he does a joke where he says, and I don't know at what point in his like career this was, but he says like something along the lines of like, oh, do you guys want to see how I get really small? Do you want to see how I can shrink? And he tells everybody to close their eyes for a second, and then he just lifts the stand of the mic up really tall.
Yeah.
And then he tells people to open his eyes. I was dying. I was like, that is so fucking genius to do that joke. Like, I didn't accept. I was like, what are you going to do? Like, how are you going to do this? And he just raises the mic. And I was like, Steve Martin, really funny guy. I get it now.
Yeah. I mean, it's like prop comedy, but done just really, really well. He's such a hilarious joke. Crazy to go out on top. Not enough people do that, you know? And he's just like, I can't improve on this, so let's try movies.
George Costanza style, honestly. He's like, that's it. I'm out. Thanks so much. Gotta see you later. really smart guy. Okay. Did you like, well, let's talk about episode two, and then maybe we can kind of compare and see which one we liked more. Episode two, called Now, obviously more of his current life, where he's at as a grown adult, with married now, with a child now, doing Only Murders in the Building, doing a tour with Martin Short, kind of a two-man tour. These kinds of things are what this episode really gets into. It does start with him cooking poached eggs on toast. I wanted to put this in here because I thought it was an incredible way, again, to start this and like set the tone of like where we're at in his life. And the fact that he uses one of those little plastic poachers that you just crack the eggs into, and then you put it in the microwave. And then he goes on to tell a story of basically every time when he travels, he gets poached eggs. And if they look really good, he'll email Martin Short a picture and he never gets anything back from Martin Short, yeah. which I think is incredible.
It was so good. And just like even the joke he tells when he does that, he's like, I know how to cook one thing. No, wait, I know how to cook two things. Two poached eggs. Like, that's it. Like, that's so funny. And like, he's not, I mean, he's 75, 76, you know, yeah. his wit, like, I forget what that word is that he talks about, the Hungarian word, but
yeah, I have it in my notes. I can pull it up because I was okay. Like, wow, this is really, really smart. Paihentagyu is what it is, I believe. Yeah. It means with a relaxed brain, being quick-witted and sharp.
And that's him, dude. It's crazy. He's so good.
Yeah, he's really, really good. I feel like sometimes that's us, or I'll just text you A24 stuff and I'll just be like, A24, crazy. And then you know what? We just move on to the next thing and it's totally yeah. okay. No love lost, honestly.
I guess I'm Martin Short of this relationship.
You're like, no, not going to respond. I get it. I'm happy for you, Ethan. That's wonderful.
We'll talk about it on the pod.
Yeah. Most of the time it's either Uncut Gems related or, Maestro related, which I understand. Not getting back to me on that. Totally okay.
Yeah. Cause you can't rein it in.
You just can't. He kind of goes on to explain why he's making the documentary, which I thought was a really good evolution for this doc, and to try to understand it a little bit more instead of like, oh, it's just about Steve Martin. Like, it is his exploration to figure out why he had good fortune. Mm-hmm. It seems to me like he does, on some level, feel pretty guilty that he had such good fortune in his career.
Yeah.
And he still kind of doesn't understand it, which I think is really fascinating from someone like him, that his wit is there. He's a funny guy. He's a movie star. He's a TV star. Like, he's still doing stuff to be at that level. And he is like, I need answers. It doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah. He seems like a very humble person. He has like a lot of humility. Mm-hmm. And it's just gotta be hard for him to recognize what he brings, you know what I mean? Like his humor and his, like the joy that he brings to others, and not understanding how that translates to his success. But he's wonderful. I think he's great.
Mm-hmm. Goes on to do Pennies from Heaven. He learns how to tap dance for like 6 months.
So cool.
Incredible. Would you ever learn how to tap dance?
If I got paid a salary like that? Fuck yeah. Sure. Let's do it.
Yeah, that's true. If I got paid a salary, I guess I'd learn how to do anything.
If I was getting paid enough that I could spend 6 months to learn how to tap dance, then yes, I would learn how to tap dance.
That's how you know you've made it. They're like, we will pay you to learn how to tap dance. He looks like he was good at tap dancing. He makes Pennies from Heaven. It flops. It's not good. He knows it's not good. Pretty much everybody knows it's not good. I love little Siskel and Ebert clip that we get in here. Really, really smart to put that in here. Really good film nod of Ebert just being like, it's really, really, really bad. It's really bad. And I was like, oh, I gotta find this episode.
It's such a weird follow-up to The Jerk, which like people loved and they wanted more of. And
he wanted to be serious.
You divert to Pennies from Heaven. It's like, nah, people aren't ready for that. They don't want that.
You know who that reminds me of?
Who's that?
Little guy named Bradley Cooper.
Oh, okay.
Except he did it. He pulled it off. Then we go to his love of art. Did you know that Steve Martin is an art guy? Did you know he's so into art?
No, I had no idea. It was amazing, though. Like, that one story, I know I'm getting ahead a little bit, but we're there at that like dinner together or whatever with a bunch of people.
Incredible.
In the museum. And the guy's like, I bet you Steve could name all these artists. And he just stood up and named every single artist in the museum. It's like, Jesus Christ, that's amazing.
That's so amazing. I feel like that's so much smarter than I'll ever be. Like, I just won't. That's just like, that art is just too smart for me.
Sure.
Couldn't do it. He talks about his love of art, how he starts collecting art. He goes to France. He buys a few paintings. He comes back. He sells one of them, basically pays for his trip to France. And then he starts getting really into art. And this is actually kind of how the second episode ends. And it's a really thoughtful, engaging moment with him analyzing a piece of art that he's had for a very long time.
Yeah.
And he talks about how over the years, his vision and what he sees in a painting of basically an old house kind of on you know, near the ocean changed, and how it's different. And I thought that was really, really, really interesting. I'm curious, like, it just sounds like he knows, and it's because he does. He knows so much about art. That's really fascinating to me. Like, I just don't, I feel like you just don't meet too many people that are like, oh, yes, I'm very astute when it comes to art.
Yeah, that are that passionate about it and that sincere. Like, yeah, he seems just in love with art and everything that goes into it. It was really cool to see.
Then we get Keepsakes, his collection. He has the sign from the magic shop where he worked at Disneyland. Yeah. He was like, yeah, it was just on eBay. Had to have it. So I bought it. I think it's incredible.
I
don't
know
what
he paid for it, honestly. I want
to
know.
I do too. I mean, it had to be, like $5,000, like at least.
I was going to say, is it someone who just like, you know, like their grandma passed away and it was just like in this collection, like, I don't know, I'll just sell it for $100. Or is it someone that knew what they had and sold it for 5 G's, like you said? I don't know.
What do you think Steve Martin's eBay username is?
The Jerk 69. That's probably him.
Look out on eBay for the Jerk 69. If he's bidding on your things, run the bid up. He can afford it. And then he uses this time to kind of go through Google and see what people say that he's worth and these things, which I thought was really kind of a funny, insightful way into how much of a hermit he kind of is. And lots of other keepsakes and things like that. I thought it was a really neat kind of exploration of like, oh, that was a time period in my life. And like, I just don't do that anymore. And I have these keepsakes that remind me of those things, which I think is really cool. There's this very key point that there's a sense of longing at the center of all of his films. We mentioned a little bit earlier how he's just like, he's kind of a private guy. And as someone who has seen one of his films, I can't really attest to this, but I'm sure that it's true.
Yeah, it was an interesting reflection on like his real life and how it shows itself in his artwork. And even how that kind of was a surprise to him at some point to learn that. It's like, oh yeah, this is kind of reflecting who I am. But yeah, I thought that was super interesting to see him kind of come to terms with that.
Then we get what I think is the most emotional / important part of this documentary, and that's him basically talking pretty openly about the trauma that he has with his father and his relationship with his father. And this play, this book that he wrote called Wasp, and how it's really the story about him and his life with his father, and how his father was pretty much always dismissive of what he did. And, you know, after he saw The Jerk, he was like, oh, you're no Charlie Chaplin. Like that was the comment, which like, I can only imagine if my dad said that to me, I'd be devastated. So like,
yeah,
I can't imagine working that hard to like get that kind of a reaction. To me, this was the most kind of like, quote unquote, like sensational part of the documentary, because it does interstitch these scenes from Wasp with him, you know, like reading it, talking about it, things like that. Do we know? So like, it shows clips from this play with Finn Wittrock, who I love. I think he's an excellent actor. Is it like a movie? Is it like a play that was filmed? I couldn't find any information on this.
I just assumed it was like recreations for the documentary, but maybe...
Oh, specifically for the doc.
That's kind of how I interpreted it, but that could be way off. Like, I don't know for sure, but that's just kind of how I took it, because they seem to do things from a few of his plays with that same kind of setup, you know?
Yeah, so, that's true.
That's what I thought it was. But either way, it was like, it was super powerful to see them act it out.
Yeah, I thought it was really powerful. And I was like, man, I'd love to see the full rendition of this. Yeah. So yeah, if you guys are listening, you should make it a full thing.
Yeah, please.
I got two more points here. Him meeting Anne, who is a fact checker at the New York Times. And basically Steve Martin started writing these kind of like op-ed pieces for the New York Times, and Anne would fact check them. He wrote essentially a comedy, like a story about a guy. I can't remember specifically, but like things go really, really wrong. And she went back to Steve Martin and was like, do you want this to be like accurate? Because we can like make it accurate factually, and then things can also go wrong. And he was like, yeah, absolutely. She continued to like work on his pieces. He wrote something about his family and XYZ, and they ended up meeting, and he was doing the New York Times crossword, and she showed up early to do the New York Times crossword because she thought he wouldn't be there. And I feel like if that happens in life, you're just kind of destined for each other.
That's their yin-yang, right? Like, that's their one of their 8,000 layers.
It really is.
They cross. Yeah. I thought that was great. I loved that story. I thought it was beautiful, like, how they first ran into each other with her just being the fact checker and how it's developed all the way to what it is now of them being together and having a child. I thought it was a beautiful story.
Yeah. And then we kind of end as life as a dad. We get a lot of like interstitch things, like I mentioned about like him and Martin Short kind of doing a tour, doing a stand up. And like, we get a lot of them like riffing jokes back and forth, which is really insightful to see like their friendship and how they create jokes and content and all of this kind of stuff. But it ends with him recording a podcast, and his Anne and his daughter like walk in and interrupt the pod. And which I was just like, initially I was like, oh my God, what a nightmare. Like, this is crazy. They're going to have to edit this out. I hope they have a producer, because we don't have a producer. And I can only imagine it would be really hard if you're the producer. And I thought it was really cool the way that they portrayed his daughter, because he didn't want her on screen, on camera, essentially. Yeah. Because why would he kind of intermix entertainment and family? They're kind of these two separate ideas for him. And so they portray her as a stick figure. He's writing a comic book, essentially an autobiography comic book, as we go through the second part. And so they use the art style from that to like cover her up, which I thought was really, really neat. And they end on a still of like a family picture drawn by the cartoonist with his daughter just as a stick person. Really sweet, sentimental way to cap this off.
Yeah, I thought it was so cool to a way to protect the child, but still include her. And then, like you said, that ending where they come in and then they just like cover her with the stick figure. Yeah. Just like, it was a beautiful scene. You could tell how much he loves being a dad. Like, we get to see some of those like FaceTimes that he sends her.
So, you know, funny.
Which is kind of cool. It's like, oh yeah, this dude is like, he looks like he'd be a fantastic dad. So, yeah, I don't know. It was a great ending to it for sure.
I'm going to steal some of his bits. Next time I see my daughters, I'm going to be like, what's your name again? Who are you? Why are you Why are you here in my house? I thought that was really funny. Yeah, I really like the rendition of Wasp and like him going through the trauma that his father caused him, and his kind of growing up with that and his life with that, and understanding that he really is actively trying to break like this generational cycle of trauma that he has. I didn't know he had it so tough, like with his dad. Pretty intense stuff. That, for me, that would be like my true cinema moment of the two. What's your true cinema? Also, like, do you have a preference in episodes, episode one or episode two?
I learned more from episode one, but I enjoyed episode two more because I connected with it better, that in the sense that I like,
perfect way to say it. Yeah.
Had a lot to connect to, of just like when they talk about All of Me, like that's a movie that my dad told me about. He's like, oh, you like Steve Martin? You got to check out this one with him and Lily Tomlin, where she kind of takes over his body. Like, so I had all those kind of connections to it. My favorite moment is from one of my favorite Steve Martin movies, which is Playing Trains Automobiles. And it's when he's reading that script and he pulls it out and talks about working with John Candy. And we had this beautiful speech at the end of the film. And for some reason, they just cut like 95% of it and reduce it to two lines. And you could just like, he has to stop talking because he's getting so emotional about it. You know, he starts reading it and he just like, he stops. And it's like, it's some of the most emotion we see from him this entire documentary. And he's just overwhelmed with it. So I just thought that was so cool, because I think it just spoke on so many levels to like his connection with John Candy and working with him and probably missing him quite a bit, and just all like what his career has been. So That would be my favorite scene, was just him kind of reflecting on working on Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
I totally agree with you that I connected more with episode two, but I learned much more from episode one. I think pretty fascinating stuff. Overall, good. I really liked it. I thought it was a really good documentary. A1 Act. We're going to do Steve Martin.
Gotta do it.
Because why wouldn't we?
It's probably not going to be an A24 movie other than this, so we got to do it. Now's the time.
Yeah, now's the only time that we're going to get. Yeah, would Steve Martin ever be in an A24 movie? That's an interesting question.
I think he could fit in easily, but I just don't know who's bringing him on, you know?
Yeah, that's tough. I feel like he'd be more of a cameo guy in an A24
film. At this point, yeah, because he even says that about the only murders in the building. He told him he'd only do it if they could do it in New York because he wants to be there with his kid. So it's whatever it is, it's got to be filmed in New York. So maybe the Safdies will scoop him up. Who knows?
There we go. Steve Martin and the Safdie Brothers movie?
Make it happen.
That's incredible. Okay, A1 act for Steve Martin. We've got The Jerk, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, The Man with Two Brains, All of Me, Three Amigos, Roxanne, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, Parenthood, Father of the Bride, Leap of Faith, Mixed Nuts, Sergeant Bilko, Bowfinger, Cheaper by the Dozen, Shop Girl, The Pink Panther, and Only Murders in the Building. That's what we've put on the short list here. That's what you've put on the short list.
That's
here,
what I put
Ben
on there, yeah.
Like I said, I've only seen one of these movies. I feel terrible. I hate it. It's not a good look for me as a guy who loves movies, as a lover of cinema, but it's just the reality of where I'm at in my life right now. I've only seen one Steve Martin movie.
Transparency. Yeah. So, do you want to let the people know what it is, or do you just want to keep it at that?
I guess. It's not a good one. I'll just say. And I haven't seen it in my adult life. Like, I saw it when I was a kid. Like, I saw when I assume when it came out, like 25-ish years ago, 20 years ago, something like that. It is Cheaper by the Dozen. And from what I can recall, it was like pretty funny movie. Like, this is good. I was probably also 14. So I was like, this is great premise for a movie. Look at all these kids. What a tough life for Steve Martin having to juggle all these kids. Can't really speak to it now. Is it good? Who knows? But that's the one I've seen.
Okay, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a few of these movies then, if you don't mind.
Make up for my lack of knowledge.
Today, I watched two Steve Martin movies. I watched Three Amigos and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Nice.
Three Amigos is hilarious. He wrote that. I think it's the first one that he wrote all by himself, and it's super funny. Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, written and directed by John Hughes. Again, like an amazing, just American treasure. Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, fantastic. Parenthood, amazing. Mixed Nuts, shout out for Matt Weiler. I got to let him put that out there. You never want someone's first thing to be their best thing, but it's hard not to say The Jerk because it's such a fantastic film. So in order to work around that, I am going to say Father of the Bride is going to be my A1 act.
Nice.
He's amazing in it. Brings me to tears. It's a beautiful film. So that's what I'm going to go with, but I don't know that you can go too wrong with any of the stuff that I talked about. Like, he's got some great movies.
From what I've seen of The Jerk in this documentary, it's hilarious. And I would like to see the film. I very much would. It looks right up my alley. And I think it looks great. Okay. We've done our A1 acts. Let's do our A24 ranking here. Like I said, a little tough to stack it against other A24 films. Like, how do you personally rank like a documentary? What are your criteria here? What do you try to do?
It's like, it is, it's apples and oranges. Like, I love a good documentary and I think this is a really good documentary. I would probably give this like an A-24, but in comparing it to other films, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know that even if it was an A+24 that I would choose it over like The Iron Claw or something along those lines, or anything like Love Lies Bleeding. We just talked about that, you know, like I would take one of those movies over this documentary, but I do still love this documentary. So it's kind of in a class of its own. I'd be curious to explore more of their documentaries, and maybe we can do that with a certain Amy Winehouse movie coming out soon. Maybe we revisit their documentary on Amy Winehouse. But yeah, I'm going to use an A-24, but it's kind of a weird asterisk because this is a documentary kind of thing.
Yeah, that's totally fair. I share the same sentiment. I'm going to lower my grade a letter. I'm going to go with a B-24. Okay. I gave this 4 stars on Letterboxd because I think it's a very solid documentary. Like you said, the struggle is comparing it against like other A24 things. Like, how do you rank it against that stuff? I think the other struggle is at least for me, someone who's like constantly trying to watch movies and looking forward to watching movies, watching a two-part doc like this, I'm like, oh, and this is the dumbest thing about living in the age that we live in. But I was like, damn, could have logged two movies on Letterboxd in the time that it took me to log one. Brutal. So like, you do have to kind of get stuck in. Like it's a commitment. It is a few hours to like go through this. And I'm not saying they could have like trimmed anything specifically or like cut it down by an hour or anything like that. Like I think this two-part structure is much better and much more effective than having a 2 hour and 20 minute doc, like single doc. Like I think that feels like a slog. So I'm glad they structured it the way they did. It still is. It's a lot of content. It's long. It's a very legendary life to try to kind of compile into a documentary. I think they did a great job. But I'm going with a B-24. Any closing thoughts on Steve Martin documentary two pieces?
Both for you and anyone listening, go watch more Steve Martin movies.
That's a great, great piece of advice.
Yeah.
I feel attacked, but in a good way. I feel like a loving embrace where it's like, hey,
it's said you just with need love. To be better. It's just like, yeah, like it's good. They're good. So go check them out.
They're good. Okay. Next week on the pod, we're doing a stand-up special. This is gonna be interesting. Our first stand-up special, Rami Youssef's More Feelings. Now I believe where is this streaming right now? Is this on Max? Am I correct?
That's a wonderful question. I don't know off the top of my head.
I feel like you and I should know because we're going to talk about it, but I feel like our listeners should also know. Okay.
It is on Max.
It is on Max. Do you know the runtime of this stand-up special?
Man, I just feel really on the spot. 55 minutes.
Whoa, 55 minutes.
That's nothing.
What is that? I don't watch stand-up specials. So is that like, is that long? Is that short?
I think about an hour is sufficient for a stand-up, yeah.
Okay, the only thing of Rami Youssef that I've ever seen is his SNL monologue from a few weeks ago.
Okay.
A1 stuff. Incredible monologue. So if it's on any level of that, I'm very excited. I have no idea how we're going to talk about it here on the show, but we're going to do it.
No clue.
And we'll figure it out as we go.
That's what we do here. You know, we just figure it out on the fly.
That's what we do.
Kind of like our intro on this episode, which you may or may not have heard. Who knows?
Yeah.
Depends on what got left in.
A little behind the scenes. We record at night. And you know what? We're busy guys. We have jobs. We have lives. And you know what? We love this pod dearly, but it is something. It's a labor of love. So sometimes, especially when you get to 145 episodes, 146 episodes, you know, you can't have it all right. Can't have it all perfect all the time. We got to do
our
best.
We'll have it dialed in by the time we do our 18-hour live stream, though. Don't worry. We will be locked in. I may request some Celsius drinks or something from people to keep us going, but we'll make it happen.
I can't. Celsius would knock me out. It just doesn't sit well in my stomach. Can't be done.
Oh, no.
I'm going to have a double shot of espresso. That's the magic key. I had a double shot of espresso going into Hereditary. So I took the double shot at like probably about 6:45 at night. And I felt so good. I was like, I'm so tuned in to Hereditary right now. It was incredible.
Are you making these at home or are you going somewhere and getting them?
Well, here's the thing. I have an espresso machine at home and they do have double shot pods. And when I have those pods, I do in fact make them at home and it's quite good. I will mix it with a little bit of oat milk, a little bit of flavoring. Ideally, I put in some hazelnut, and that's how you get a good little double shot. I'm a black coffee kind of a guy, but with my double shots, I gotta have a little extra in there. But I don't have any pods right now, so I'm going out and I'm getting them at Dutch Bros. I don't know if you guys have Dutch Bros in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, they're the place that look like they should be like a paint shop.
Yeah, fair. Yes, 100%. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Exceptionally similar to Sherwin-Williams, yes. Their coffee is bad, but their double shots, pretty good. Get it over ice, too. Very distinct. Got to be over ice.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. You're a coffee guy.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Black coffee?
I like a little creamer in it, for sure.
Okay.
Like
flavored creamer?
Vanilla. I like a vanilla.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right.
I grew up in a religion that didn't allow this stuff. So my transition into coffee was like hot chocolate to mochas, which is still probably like my favorite thing is hot a mocha. Hot chocolate
coffee, yes.
Yes, yeah. Like I got to start somewhere, work my way into a mocha, and then eventually coffee. So I'm still a sucker for a mocha though, for sure.
Yeah, that's fair. I have escalated to black coffee because during grad school, I started much like you. I was like, we got to put in some French vanilla creamer. We got to like half coffee, half creamer. We got to go really easy on the coffee. And pretty quickly, I was like, black coffee is the only way for me. We got to do it. I actually recently just got a pour over kit so I can do an at home pour over. It's kind of a lot of work and I haven't figured out how to do it right yet because there's like a science. You got to do the right amount of water. You got to do the right amount of like kind of spins. It's a whole process that sometimes I'm like, I just want to go to Dutch Bros, you know,
gotta do it.
In May, we're covering two movies, two TV shows, and a stand-up special, like I said. We're covering a lot of A24 stuff, a lot of different A24 stuff. I think it's going to be a very fun month here on the pod.
I can't wait. I'm excited. It's kind of funny that, we're doing like a one-hour TV or stand-up special, and then we're covering an entire season of a TV show the next week, but it's probably a good thing to balance them out that way. But
yeah, do we want to let the listeners know now what it is in case they want to follow along, in case they want to be well-read? Sure, that's probably a great
idea. Yeah, let's let them know what our schedule is.
Yeah, we're going to cover, like we said, Rami Youssef's More Feelings next week. I think the week after that, we're covering Has Been Hotel.
Yep.
I think that is what our plan is. Should be a pretty short watch. It is a series. It's a full season we're going to cover. So we're going to talk about the whole first season. But from what I heard, it's a pretty easy watch. Then we're going to talk about I Saw the TV Glow.
Yep.
Really excited. If our cities get it, that is, as is the case with all crossed. A24 things. Fingers crossed. Fingers crossed for you, Ben, is really how that works.
That is how it works, unfortunately.
Then we're going to have a really cool, awesome special guest on. We're going to talk about a movie called Free Fire. I've never heard of this movie until our guest reached out to me and was like, have you guys talked about this? And I was like, I've never heard of it. Come on the show. Let's talk about it. A movie with Cillian Murphy and Brie Larson in the A24 library.
I believe produced by Scorsese.
Oh, wow.
I might be talking about school.
You better
here.
Fact check that. Get Anna on the phone. Get our New York Times fact checker over here. Holy cow.
Let me know. Yeah, tell me.
Let me know.
Charlotte Copley's in it. Armie Hammer, which maybe not a great thing to talk about, but yeah.
Ooh, just took a hit.
Yeah.
And then we're going to be doing The Sympathizer.
Executive producer, Martin Scorsese. I was right. He's on there.
You pulled that out. Look at you.
Pulled it out of nowhere.
Shit. How have we not talked about that movie?
I don't know.
How did I not even know that movie existed? That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we're going to talk about Free Fire, and then we're going to end May by talking about the entire season of The Sympathizer, a show that we started covering last week. We talked about episode one. By the time that the end of May rolls around, I believe all the episodes should be out, and we're going to be talking about it the full season. So we got a whole slate in May, and I'm really excited for what we're going to talk about.
Yeah, so please join us on this. Rami Youssef, again, is on Max. Has Been Hotel is on Prime, Amazon Prime Video, so you can watch that there. That'll help get you prepped for our next two episodes. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. But for now, tell us what you thought about Steve Martin, a documentary in two pieces on Apple TV Plus. Did you guys enjoy it? What's your favorite Steve Martin movie? Is it Cheaper by the Dozen? That's totally fine if it is. Like, let us know. Hit us up.
Oh, wow. Okay. I don't feel attacked at all.
No, you shouldn't. I'm trying to be an open, accepting place here. So we're on Twitter and Instagram at 24 Minutes of A24. You can also subscribe to us on YouTube and watch us talk about these films and these projects. We are very grateful for everyone's support. Thank you so much. I am Ben Lawhorn.
And I am Ethan Simi. Spring break forever, bitches.